Hello and welcome to this episode of
Super Star Wars Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe Podcast. Today we're continuing our discussion of Star Wars Rebels with Season 2, Episodes 14 and 15. Joining me is Sarah Hayashi. Riki cannot join us today, but Sarah and I are going to be talking about what is really kind of a great stretch of episodes here. All that and more after a commercial break we have no control over. Welcome back. I'm Matthew, your host. I'm joined as I said by Sarah Hayashi. You know, and Sarah, I'm definitely missing Riki today. I'm sure that you like he's been gone for a couple weeks by now. But at least your other husband showed up. We get to talk in this first episode about Hondo and Naka.
Sorry, Riki who? Yeah, Hondo and Naka is all I care about right now.
There you go. So, and we're talking here about Legend 14. We're talking here about Episode 14, Legends of Lasat. I'll give a quick summary of it. Following a tip from Hondo, the Ghost crew rescues a pair of Lasats from Imperial custody, Chava the Wise and Gron, who both recognize Zeb as captain of the Lasan Honor Guard. Chava and Gron explain that they are searching for the mythical world of Lyra San, where the surviving Lasats can find refuge. However, Zeb is reluctant to help due to his guilt over failing to protect Lasan from the Empire. With some encouragement from Ezra, Zeb transforms his bow rifle into its true form and combines it with Chava's staff, revealing Lyra San's location in an uncharted wild space. However, they find their way blocked by a dense cluster of black holes while Agent Kallus pursues them. Trusting in Chava's wisdom, Zeb uses the energy from the bow rifle to create a protective field around the ghost, allowing it to navigate the black hole cluster safely. On the other side, they find the world of Lyra San, which is the true home of the Lasat people. After dropping off Chava and Gron, Zeb decides to stay on the ghost in order to find more Lasat survivors to guide back to Lyra San. It is in this episode that the ancient names of the side of the Force are first revealed by Chava, calling the light side the Ashla and the dark side the Bogan, and repeated by the Bendu and Atalan in a later episode of Rebels. This summary doesn't really mention the fact that I think this is Hondo Hondoing at like the best Hondoing. Like this is top level Hondo,
yeah,
right?
This is peak Hondo. I mean, I know that it is a Lasat heavy episode, especially with like plot wise, but character wise, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm like a smidge biased, but I think Hondo really stands out.
I think it's a nice balance because you're right. It is very much a character-driven episode. We get so much more about Zeb, Gera Zeb, as we actually learned his full. I think we've heard that before.
But... yeah, his hair is full named him in mom mode, but yeah.
Right. So we get to hear that again, and I mean, all the stuff about the Lasat, all the stuff about Zeb is so good, and we'll get to. But yeah, it was just Hondo is in this episode. He is double-crossing everyone and anyone at any point in time. He's, you know, it's clear that he has an affection for Ezra. He cares about the ghost crew. But he's not going to, like, put himself at risk. And if the Empire captures him, he's happily going to sell them out, too.
Well, I think he cares about not dying as well, right? Like, he's got to stay in the good books of the Empire. So, like, the whole setup is that, like, Ezra gets this tip from Hondo. He doesn't reveal it's from Hondo, first of all. He just says, like, oh, it's just a hot tip, guys. Let's go. And it seems like Hondo's told Ezra, like, hey, I've got these two Lasat for you, and it's just me gonna meet you, when in reality he's selling them to the Empire. And he's like, oh, right. I knew you'd fly in and rescue them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, you know, so on the one hand, he's selling them to the Empire. You think he is rooting for them all to get away.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, he again puts a tracker, like, when they get away, but the Empire captures him, you know, he's sort of like... oh no, what am I going to do? And he again kind of helps them to capture Ezra and all that, or at least to almost capture Ezra. But Ezra and Kanan and all them are smart enough. They figure out a way to get away, and as we said, with Zeb doing all this crazy stuff. And then at the end of it, Hondo's like, oh, I always knew that would happen. Clearly this was a good partnership for us. So if you just pay me my 20%, everything will be fine. And Ezra just says, no, I'm you betrayed us. I'm not paying you.
Yeah. Well, even like, I was going to say, even before that, like when he meets them up and he's like, so where's my finder's fee? So you're not going to give me my finder's fee now? And Ezra's like, you were never going to get it in the first place. Yeah. And Honda like wipes a tear from his eye. Like, I've taught you so well. I'm so proud.
And at that end scene, it's just, it's exactly that. It's like, I'm so proud of you. Mm-hmm. I always knew that you would come along. Like, it's so clear that he's like, yeah, he would like to get paid. But mostly he just loves Ezra. He has this like parental relationship with Ezra that is just like, I want to raise you to be scum and villainy of the universe just the way I am.
Yeah. And I do think his like selling them out moments are like, I don't know, I feel like it's not quite like we saw with Princess Leia doing this like faux okay, I'm a friend of the Empire thing, but I think right. He is like trying to help them get away while staying in the Empire's good books. Like when they initially come up to him and ask Hondo like where are the rebels, he's like, oh, I don't know, maybe if you pay me. And then they threaten him and he's like, oh, I think they might have gone this direction actually.
Yeah.
And then again they ask Hondo to help track the rebels and he's like, I don't know, maybe we should talk about money first, like, and how would I actually track them? He's like, we know you have a tracking device on them. And Hondo's like, yeah, you're right, I was just about to say that, bro, like, let's go. And even then, like when they or Kallus confronts the rebels, they put Hondo on and he's like, I had a tracking device in your communicator, right? Like telling them exactly where the tracking device is so that they can destroy it. And like he says it was for insurance purposes. Like I fully believe that tracking device was on the communicator the entire time. Like he didn't put it there specifically to track them for the Empire or anything like
I'd
that.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think if you draw a line from like the most betrayal of like a Lando Calrissian who like does come back to the right side, but is straight up betraying our heroes to Darth Vader and Boba Fett, to like Leia, where like clearly she is just lying through her teeth, to Leia, who is just clearly lying through her teeth the whole time. I think Hondo's somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like he's trying to set things up so that it looks to the Imperials like he made Ezra and then the Fall Guys, but he thinks he's giving Ezra enough room to wiggle out. But if there's ever a situation, at least from what we know of Hondo so far, where Ezra actually isn't able to wiggle out and is killed, or they all are captured, Hondo's not going to risk his life to save them. You know, yeah, he's going to be like, well, you were great, you didn't survive, oh well, I'll raise a toast to your memory.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly, yeah. Hondo loves Hondo, money, and then like somewhere down there is Ezra, like below that, yeah.
I think it's for him. I think we talked about this a bit before. It's just, it's all a game, you know? And so it's like, this is the game. I love the game. Like, sometimes we're going to betray each other in the game, and sometimes we're going to get killed, and that's just how it works. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's just... It's just so nice, especially having just come off Cad Bane and Boba Fett and all that.
Yeah.
Cad Bane is just a straight up, like, you know, the man in the black hat from a Western. Like, he is just, you know, gritty and real and like gonna kill you. And Hondo is just having so much more fun with it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Okay, so let's talk about the actual real story here.
Fine.
I mean, Hondo is just such a good like setting up piece for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what'd you think of the actual story we get?
Yeah, I think it's really sweet. Especially another episode we're about to talk about. I think, is it Homecoming? Where, yeah, so not the next episode.
That one we're actually going to do next week, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry. But yeah, an upcoming episode that deals more with, like, Zeb's background, to sort of lay this down. And I think it really helps flesh out, like, Zeb's guilt. And he's guilty for no reason, it seems like. Like, he feels guilty because he didn't single-handedly stop the Empire from destroying his planet, which is... like, completely unrealistic, right? Like, I don't think there's anything he could have done, but he still feels that, like, super guilt about it.
Right.
And the fact that we learned that he was a captain of the Honor Guard, and, like, Ezra's shocked by this, and it turns out, like, even, like, Hera is too. Kanan might have known. Kanan rescued him from Lusan. But, yeah, and he's just, like, I don't know, so anti-Lasat stuff, or just, like, doesn't want to be... mm-hmm. considered a hero for them because he feels like he's not. And then you've got like Chava, who's very like she's a spiritual leader, and her kind of like hippy dippy, it'll all be okay, here's the prophecy speak, clearly grates on
Zeb. Whole wonderful prophecy about like how the three people who will lead them are the child, the warrior, and the fool. And Zeb is trying to figure out, okay, who is who? Like, I don't think I'm the child. I'm the warrior. Maybe Kallus is the fool. Maybe Ezra's the child. until eventually he realizes that he's all three.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's about his journey. And yeah, to me, it was so beautiful because I think you're right that, like, you know, if he sits down with a therapist, the therapist could be like, dude, you couldn't have done anything to save this.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, like, if a random person on the SOT felt that way, I'd be like, this is major, major, like, what in the world are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
He's part of the honor guard, you know? And so I'm guessing to him, like, he probably swore an oath to, like, you know, defend the lives of, you know, the royalty or whatever mm-hmm. with his life. And granted, the overwhelming force that they faced, one person in the honor guard was never going to stop. But you get that idea of why he, you know, felt so abandoned, and why he, not even abandoned, but why he felt he had to step away from all of this. Because,
totally.
But part of what comes up is he thinks at this point that he is the only living Lasat left. Like, he has no idea. And so, yeah, I mean, trying to, like, hold on to a dead culture like that, I can just see being, like, something he just wants nothing to do with.
Yeah, and even this, like, yeah, like, the whole survivor guilt thing, totally get mm-hmm. that. But yeah, like you're saying, trying to hold on to this culture, like, it feels like he doesn't want to hope anymore. Like,
yeah.
Hoping that there are other survivors or, like, other Lasats around has probably, like, really worn him down. And then finding these two who are like, we're off to go find our home planet, which is riddled with Lasats. Totally. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think he's just kind of like, I can't get my hopes up anymore because I've been so crushed and so disappointed.
In a weird way, I don't even know if the writers of this episode knew this, because I think this book comes later, but I've referenced a couple times the book that's kind of Kanan's origin story, where he is just, like, living his life as a pilot and trying not to have anything to do with anything, just keep his head down, because he's lost all hope and all faith,
mm-hmm.
until he winds up running into this pilot who he just wants to flirt with and go on a date with, but it turns out she's actually really into this resistance thing, the rebellion thing called Hera Syndulla. And again, I think there's a really nice parallel between Kanan's story and Zeb's story that we get here. Because by the end, Zeb does have faith. And Zeb is the one, like, everyone on the ship is like, what are you doing? You're taking us into the black hole cluster. And he's like, no, trust me. I got this.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that he doesn't just stay on Lirasan either. He goes back with the rebels. It's nice because, I mean, like, I love Zeb as a character and I don't want him to leave mid-season 2. But, like, this, the idea that he's going to go find more Lasat and bring them back, right? Like, he went from thinking he was the literal only survivor. He didn't want to be, like, dissuaded otherwise to, like, I'm going to go find more. There are more.
And I think one thing I really like about that is it would be easy for this to be a story of, like, that there's something special about Zeb that makes him, you know, one more chosen one story where he's literally the only person who can bring people there. He's the only person who can do this.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly that's not true because there's a bunch of Lasat already there. And so, like, they don't actually tell us, but I think in my head canon at least, there's a number of these wisdom women, like Chava, you know, so-and-so the wise, each of whom have found someone who is the fool, the child, and the warrior. And, like, so there's a number of these Lasats who are carrying survivor's guilt and who are going on this journey to be able to bring people there. And I love that it's not just, it is Zeb's story, but it's not just him.
Yeah, totally. And I think the end reveal of, like, the fool, the child, the warrior is everybody. We all go through them at one point in our life. It is nice because, yeah, like, Zeb is special, right? Like, but he's not the special one. He's just, like, a special one. And this idea that, like, it's all of us. Yeah, because, I mean, I, too, with, like, when the episode was on, I was like, okay, so is the fool Hondo because he brought them there? And the child's Ezra? Oh, no, the child has to be a Lasat. Okay, so the child is Zeb. Is the warrior Kallus? Like, yeah, going through that whole thing. And then just be like, it's you. It was all you all the time. You're like, oh, okay.
One other thing from this episode I really liked, and it's just a nice bit of world building, and I will say the episode summary we wrote, I think, gives a bad take on this. And so I want to say just how it appears in the episode itself. As you said, they believe in this kind of, like, spiritual, like, deity kind of, but it's not like a deity, like the kind of, you know, a big man in the clouds with a big white beard. It's more just kind of like a spiritual force, force with a capital, with a lowercase F. That's the point. And she describes it, and she calls it the Ashla. And Kanan says, oh, okay, that's your word for the force. And she says, you have the force, we have the Ashla.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a subtle difference because I like the idea of that they, like, that there's this divine thing, the force, however you want to think of it. Like, maybe it's divinity, maybe it's just like a physics thing, and but I hate that part of it. But, like, you know, however you see it, whatever level of spirituality you do or don't give to it, what he says is a very, I mean, he means it well, but it's this thing that, like, especially I think, like, Christians do all the time, where it's like, oh, okay, well, like, you know, Buddha is giving you a version of Christianity. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a partial truth, and we'll give you the full truth. You know, our version is the real one, but you all have your own versions of our real truth. And her response is to say, you have the force, we have the Ashla. It puts them on equal terms, you know, and it's this idea of, again, here I'm probably projecting a lot because of my own just feelings of like divinity and metaphor and stuff. But I've always liked the idea that, like, you know, even if there is kind of one central sacred whatever, and like, you know, polytheists will disagree, and that's also totally fine. But that, like, you know, religion is all just about trying to find the metaphor that explains it. And mm-hmm. and I'm going to use one metaphor, and someone else is going to use a different metaphor, and it's going to look very different because of that. But my metaphor is better, and their metaphor is better. And yeah, I just really like that, because we do get so much of, like, the force is just sort of the uber religion for everything. And so I love the way it's presented here.
Yeah, totally. Like, we get a little bit of it with the Night Sisters, and I know we talked about them at length. But yeah, and I completely agree. This, like, not even shutting down, but just, like, a subtle, like, mm-hmm. maybe the Force is just a different word for Ashla. Like,
yeah.
Right? Like, you're Kanan centering his own experience as, like, exactly. the default normalized experience. Yeah, and I think, like, we all do that. Just, I mean, I was, when you were saying this, I was, like, reminded of when I was learning Japanese. I was like, how come sometimes numbers are written normally and sometimes they're written in kanji?
Oh. Yeah.
And Riku was like, normally? What do you mean? Yeah. I'm like, oh, right, no. I did it.
I mean, these things we're just taught are the default, and so we see everything through those terms, and it's a good reminder of, like, that, you know, that everything is subjective in those kind of ways.
Totally, yeah, and like, just the, again, the world building of, like, the Force or Ashla or whatever you'd like to call it exists in multiple different forms, or at least, like, is interpreted in multiple different ways, is really nice, because we've always kind of, like, talked, especially with the Night Sisters, about how, like, it can't just be the Jedi and the Sith, and then, like, full stop, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we know that Ahsoka, we've seen her in the show, that she is very pointedly saying, like, I'm not a Jedi. She's a light force user, in the same way that I think the Night Sisters are dark force users, but they're not Sith. But even then, like, they're still using the Force. Here's this idea that's a totally different word. So.
Well, don't, and they call it, like, magics, but yeah, it's basically,
Any other last things about this episode before we move on to the next one?
Nothing comes to mind. The bow rifle thing was really neat, and, like, totally makes sense why it's called a bow rifle now. But yeah,
and something really nice, especially about the warrior, about, like, it converting into this thing of, like, spiritual protection. All right, episode 15, The Call. The Ghost Crew is on a mission to capture a fuel cell. Yeah, do you want to read?
Oh, sure. Yeah. The Ghost Crew is on a mission to capture a fuel shipment from the Mining Guild to the Empire in order to restock the Rebel Fleet's own dwindling supplies. While traveling to the Guild's asteroid refinery, the Ghost encounter a flock of Purgil, space-traveling creatures whom Hera considers dangerous. However, Ezra manages to establish contact with them through the Force and learns about his crew and the Purgil actually... And learns that the... Pardon me. Through the Force, and learns that his crew and the... This is such a weird sentence, I'm sorry.
Yeah. His crew you want to and the start, Purgil start actually produce the same...
Okay. However, Ezra manages to establish contact with him through the Force and learns that his crew and the Purgil actually pursue the same basic goal, if for slightly different priorities. Upon reaching the Mining Guild's base, the crew finds the Mining Guild attempting to exterminate the Purgil. Kanan decides to raid the base, steal the shipment, while igniting the rest of the fuel to create a diversion. However, Ezra stops him when he realizes that the Purgil also need the fuel. When it appears as if the Mining Guild forces will overwhelm the crew, the Purgil arrive and attack the Mining Guild, giving the crew the time they need to escape with the fuel. As the Ghost flies away, the crew witness the Purgil going into hyperspace, confirming rumors that they are migratory species they're a migratory species capable of faster-than-light travel without technology.
Yeah. So, during our Clone Wars coverage, we would often talk about how Obi-Wan was just the sort of Steve Irwin of this universe, you know, and that he always could get along with animals. We're going to talk about this even more next week, but I just love that that's where they're going with Ezra as well. Like, Ezra is just always the one, I think in a lot of ways, Kanan is still stronger in the Force than Ezra is. Maybe Ezra has more potential, but Kanan certainly knows it more. But Ezra's just amazing with animals in ways mm-hmm. that not even Kanan can do.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally got Obi-Wan vibes when he's, like, riding the Purrgil, right? It's like, mm-hmm. it's great. Yeah, true Disney princess.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And we'll probably talk a little bit more about the Purrgil in a spoiler section at the end, because they do appear in later episodes as well. I feel like this, like, you know, I often measure a show in part by how much do I have to suspend my disbelief. Okay. And, like, a lot of these episodes, I'm like, cool, okay, I can go with this. This episode is probably the one in Rebels that takes me the closest to taking me out of it. Like, it's... Space whales is a fun idea, but I don't think, like, you can have, like, more than 3 seconds of logic thinking about it. And I mean, granted, the whole point, like, none of us have ever been, like, to outside of a solar system, just, like, empty space, and maybe it's a possibility, but I'm raising a serious eyebrow.
Yeah, and especially since, like, Hera seems to have encountered them before, and they're kind of, like... Like, she talks about them like they're sort of like deer that people hit with their cars, and it's annoying and they're dangerous because mm-hmm. they just jump into the middle of hyperspace lanes. And, like, yeah, this whole rumor that they can, like, jump to light speed is, yeah, odd. I don't know. I didn't think about it too much because space whales.
I mean, they're super cute and they're super fun. Like, I totally get that part. Like,
yeah. But no, I agree. It doesn't necessarily make sense, although, like, I mentioned I think last week that we started watching Voltron Legendary mm-hmm. Defender, and they also have a space whales plotline situation, so, like, okay. I don't know where these space whales are coming from, but
it's a thing people are into. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I mean, other than that, there's really not that much that happens in the episode. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward, like, you know, can we achieve our goal while also protecting these creatures who are there. The guy who's the head of the mining, like, there's some fun, like, adventure type stuff, but I don't know if it adds too much to the story. There's a very classic, like, mustache twirling guy who just wants to kill all the Purrgils.
I feel he's less mustache twirling and more like, I don't know, I got, like, farmer upset that wild animal keeps eating his crop vibes.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, mustache twirling in terms of, like, he has no redeeming features, he's just the villain. But you're right, no, mustache twirling should mean, like, the sort of, like, mwahaha, I am being evil because the script wants me to be evil without any discernible reason for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's clearly not the nicest dude, right? But, I mean, he's upset that the space whales keep eating his crop, which happens to mm-hmm. be fuel, and that, like, people are trying to steal his fuel.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, fair, I guess.
You know. Everyone's got their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. It's kind of fun, though, to learn a little bit more about the whole fuel situation. And, like, we definitely get some fun character moments as they're all kind of trying to deal with this. And also, I just think it's an Ezra episode. It's one more mm-hmm. way to see, like, Ezra getting to, you know, do what he needs to do and take care of things.
Yeah, totally.
With animals, especially.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree. Like, this episode is... It's all just, like, Ezra setup, basically. Yeah. Like, here he is communing with his space whale friends.
Exactly. I think that's about all I have to say about the episode. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's mm-hmm. it's neat. I think, like, when we get to the spoilery section, I'll have more stuff to say about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just, like, I mean, it's not a bad episode by any means. Fun little adventure story of this fuel heist. I like that we get the rebels themselves having, like, different ideas. Oh, and I do... Oh, man. There's, like, some Ezra... Not Ezra, pardon me. Kanan being, like... kind of jackassy to Hera moments
mm-hmm.
Where because he sort of sides with Ezra in, like, we don't need to kill the space whales,
right?
And then when it turns out, like, we don't need to kill the space whales, he's like oh, hey babe, guess who didn't need to kill the space whales? Was it us? Did we not need to do it, huh? How about that? Like, super I told you so, just like mm-hmm. don't rub it in, Kanan, come on.
Well, and I'm glad you bring up that moment, because, like, Hera is all about wanting to kill the space whales. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that, again, she's just like, maha, let's kill whales. It's like, these things are as far... To people who don't understand them, you know, they're kind of, they're thought of as a menace. Like, they can, like, crash into ships, especially mm-hmm. in hyperspace. Like, they can do real damage. And so she just sees them as, like, you know, dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is really funny, though, is that Ezra is decidedly on team. These are living beings. These are, like, you know, capable beings. They're worthy of life. And, like, we should protect them. That's not where Kanan is.
No.
Kanan doesn't want to kill them, but for her, it's about, like, I don't want to waste the fuel of getting into a fight with them. I like him. It's much more practical. It's much more, you know, he doesn't have this like, oh, let's save the honor and dignity and the lives of the Purgles. And that's just kind of fun because it's one more way where he's not a traditional Jedi that I really appreciate.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it is. It is good. Yeah. I mean, right. Like, and the whole him and Hera kind of bickering moments are just like a fun little, I don't know, coupley moment between them, even though we never actually. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I think, well, that didn't take very long. So why don't we just do one more episode? So just full disclosure, Sarah and I may be recording 2 weeks worth of content in this one day. We're trying to decide on that. But so we watched a number of episodes and we're going to see how many we're doing. We got so much more time. Let's go right into Homecoming and then we can do a bit of the spoiler section.
Okay. Yeah. And I especially like the next, like 17 and 18, I feel like we're going to want to talk about for a long time. So.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think it's fair. All right. So 16. Homecoming. In order to provide a safe shelter for their fighters, ships, not like people who fight, the rebels plan to capture an Imperial carrier stationed currently above Ryloth, Hera's home planet. In order to pull the mission off, the Ghost crew contacts Hera's father, the famed Twi'lek Resistance fighter, Cham Syndulla, who we spent quite a lot of time with in the Clone Wars TV show. However, Cham desires to destroy this carrier as a demonstration of power and only grudgingly agrees to capture it. Hera later tells Ezra that she and her father are not on the best of terms, as Hera believes Cham is obsessed with the Twi'lek Resistance, while Cham believes Hera's faith in the rebellion is misguided. Which I should say, by the way, that in part of that's because, like, the Republic flat out failed him a number of times in his, like, battles for Ryloth, including the Jedi. So he has good reason to not trust them. Piloting a captured TIE bomber, Hera successfully infiltrates the crew and Cham's team into the carrier. But Cham's team betrays them and moves to destroy the carrier. Ezra uses a Jedi mind trick on the captain to have the crew abandon ship, while Zeb and Sabine subdue Cham's men. Hera manages to convince Cham to help her, and they destroy a pursuing Imperial cruiser, achieving the demonstration Cham wanted. After adding the carrier to the Rebel fleet, Hera and Cham reconcile the relationship before parting ways. This is a fantastic episode. Mm-hmm. I really loved it. What did you think of this?
Yeah, it struck a real chord with me. For like a lot of kind of personal issues, but yeah, no, it's so good, and I love that we get to see more of who Hera is and like why maybe she's like so committed to the rebellion,
right?
Yeah. So like we learn that like her mom died at the hands of the Empire, basically. Yeah, it's like this weird gray zone when they're kind of transitioning, right?
Because, like, in theory, the Empire was, like, the Republic became the Empire in the official law. But, like, we know the Empire was definitely more like the Separatists, but, like, grew out of that in some ways. And to Cam, it's kind of the, like, I think somewhat of Ryloth is kind of like Vietnam, you know, and that they fight off the Japanese, and then they now have to deal with the French again. Then they fight off the French, and now they have to deal with the Americans. And then deal with the Americans, and then, like, issues with the communist China. And, like, I think Cham, that's just it. It's just, like, he's just, like, we're just going to kick... Whoever it is, we're going to try and kick them out. You know, yeah. I'm not even bothered anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's, like, other... like you said, the Clone Wars deals a lot with Ryloth and the politics. We get some political strife in Ryloth in Bad Batch too, I believe. Right?
Yeah.
But even like putting aside all like the sort of political reasoning, just like Hera's relationship with her dad.
Oh, it's so good.
And it's so crushing, especially like because Cham is this sort of like venerated war hero. Kanan's heard about him through the Jedi when they were working together on Ryloth, right? So when he meets him, he's got this like nervous energy, and at first it's this like it seems as though it's I'm nervous to meet my girlfriend's dad kind of energy, right? But then it turns out he's just like fangirling over Cham and as a war hero, and I think like Hera's really crushed by that because like Kanan knows that Hera does not like her dad and she is not on good terms with him, and then Kanan even says like, oh, just give him a chance, like I see a lot of him in you, which just feels like daggers. Like, I don't know.
And like, as we see, he's right. But it's that sort of thing where, like, you know, you and your parent or you and your sibling may be very similar, but like those similarities are actually a big part of why you fight all the time, you know? And yeah, I think it's such an interesting story, and it touches on so many issues about, like, you know, do you kind of, first of all, like the whole thing of, you know, how do you balance fighting for a cause while fighting for your family? Because one of the issues is that he was pretty much an absentee father, because what he cared about was freeing Ryloth, not, you know, helping his daughter. At the same time, you know, there's also another question of, so do you stay and fight for your home planet, or do you go and fight as part of this broader rebellion for everyone? And there's some things that were done in this episode that were just so subtle as ways of showing Hera's struggle. And one of them is that she code switches, you know, which she at one point, you know, he and a lot of Twi'leks have this kind of French accent type thing. A lot of other Twi'leks don't, especially those who are not living on Ryloth. And at one point, as she's getting into the conversation with him and getting upset with him, she starts switching into that accent. And like, I couldn't tell if the idea was that she's always trying not to do it, but here she just kind of like lets that down. Or if it's like that just being around him brings it back. Or if that she's like intentionally switching into it in order to kind of like try to get to him more. But whatever it is, it's like, I mean, I know that folks who are, you know, who kind of have come from one culture and then move into another one and like, there's lots of reasons why people code switch, but especially in this kind of a story, if someone who's, like, gone away from kind of the home culture but then goes back, like, code switching like this is a really big deal and can be really have a lot of landmines and difficulties.
Yeah. Oh, I know, like, one of the most, like, heartbreaking things I felt is when I went home one year for Christmas and, like, could hear Canadian accents. And it was just, like... Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's a hard topic.
Sorry. It's also gotten weirdly dark in here. Anyway.
I know you said something personal. We can totally move on to a different subject.
No, it's good. I just like... My mom's coming too and things are weird. Okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, for me, I know like one of the most heartbreaking things I've experienced is like when I went home to Canada and I could hear Canadian accents. Because like you hear about Americans like making fun of us saying sorry instead of sorry and all that kind of stuff, and or like about and a boot, and I'm like, that's all just made up. Like, there's no way. I can't hear that. I grew up in Canada, I live in America now, we sound the exact same. Canadian accents are a myth. And then I went home and my family, all my friends, they sounded different to me, and I was just like, it stung. It felt like it wasn't my home anymore. And I know like the code switching thing, I do think it was done really, really well. And I think, like for me, when I'm back home for a while, I do just start speaking with my Canadian accent again. And it disappears basically, like, as soon as I get back home or back to America. So, yeah. And I love the way that it comes out when she's, like, fighting with him and getting into this heated argument. I don't think it's she's kind of constantly trying to subdue it, right? Because she is... Yeah. She's been gone for a long time. It totally makes sense that she would lose her accent and that, like, being around her dad, talking with him in this heated moment. Yeah, it brings it right back. And I love the title of the, like, the episode's title is Homecoming, right? And this idea of, like, Hera's coming home, but, like, she's not really, because this isn't really her home anymore, right? It was her home. But since she's made her home, like, on the Ghost with her new family, with Kanan, and this is just, like, the place that she used to live. I don't know. Yeah, I'm projecting a lot, but...
No, and I'm fair. I mean, I have... I never really felt like I had a New York accent, and I don't think I do, but I definitely have New York speech patterns, you know? And, like, when I... Last time, when my partner, Mary, and I went to New York City for a week for my sister's wedding, among other things, first of all, yeah, like, I had this before because I've been gone for quite a while, but I definitely noticed my father's accent more than I normally do. And, like, all of the sort of uncles and... I mean, some of them have very thick New York, Brooklyn accents, and I always noticed that. But I was much more aware of it this time. But also, like, I didn't pick up an accent, but Mary at one point had to be like, Matthew, can you slow down? You're speaking about, like, 50% faster than you normally do. Because it's just, yeah, it's the New York vocal patterns. And, like, I have worked very consciously since I moved to the Midwest to slow down, to not interrupt all the time. Because on the East Coast, that's considered polite, and mm-hmm. here it's really not. You know, different forms of active listening. And yeah, I think part of what I like about it so much is that no one mentions it.
Mm-hmm.
What Hera does in the code switching. You know, yeah. that like there's never the moment where Kanan says, hey, you're slipping into that accent. Like, it just happens. Mm-hmm. And if you know what code switching is, or if you don't know that term for it, but you've seen it, like, it's going to register for you. Or maybe you're just kind of thinking, like, why does she does do this? For some, it might go totally over their heads, and that's okay, too. But it's just, if you know what to look for, or if it, like, makes you curious and you ask about it, it's such a great detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, like, I don't know, like, yeah, even there's another, like, little moment where, like, Tam is talking about Chopper. And this is, okay, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily love their reconciliation at the end, because I think, like, Tam hasn't really earned it. Yeah. Like, he basically has just gone along with his daughter and her, like, kooky little friends, but he's still going to do his own plan the whole time.
Right.
And just, like, betrays her because he doesn't believe in her or her cause.
Right.
And he just calls Chopper, like, your droid. Oh, this is, like, your little droid that you played with as a kid. Weird. Mm-hmm. And at the end, when he's come around, basically because, like, he doesn't really have much of a choice, it seems, but,
I think,
like,
of course it's true, but I think it's that he does come to really recognize her and, like, remember that, like, it may be, like, you know, the lack of a choice, but it does very much seem like, he really has a change of heart about her.
Yeah, but he still calls Chopper droid, right? Like, if he would have called him, like, Chopper, or even, like, C1, like, C110P, go for it, like,
mm-hmm.
it just, like, is the subtle little dig that's, like, you still think she's just, like, a little kid playing games.
I think for those of us who have not spent so much time thinking about droid rights and droid abilities, it may not be in any conscious way like that, but I think you're definitely right that I think on the personal level, I think Cham was a terrible father, and I think Cham has never had faith in her the way he should, and betraying them, I think, is completely not okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think I do have some sympathy for Cham, though, because, first of all, like, in everything in Clone Wars, like, he's just constantly getting, you know, the rebellion, the Republic promises in one thing, and then they don't deliver, and the Separatists do terrible things. But one of the things also that happened to them a lot was he would say, look, I want to protect Ryloth, I want to help Ryloth. And often he'd get the message of, like, well, but actually, like, Ryloth is just one part of a larger battle. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be thinking about the larger battle. Mm-hmm. And which there's some truth to, but also because, again, it's about the Jedi being, like, you know, becoming callous and hard-hearted. Sometimes it's kind of like, yeah, so we're not going to prioritize Ryloth and we're not going to focus on it as much. And I think given that, and also given that, like, there is, I think it's a trope you've seen in other places of the sort of the big, powerful, like, uber rebellion kind of being like, okay, well, you really care about your one planet and your one battle, but that's not central to us, so we're not going to help you, mm-hmm. or we're going to ask you to do something totally different. And the people are like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, like, so I guess to...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it has, like, second wavy feminist vibes of, like, okay, first we're going to, like, liberate the white women, and then that'll be good for everybody. Like, you'll just come along naturally. Don't worry about it. It's right. Like, I am worried about it. Yeah, totally. And I imagine that, like, Cham also feels super betrayed that Hera left, right?
Right.
So he's probably got his own feelings about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I...
Like, I'm definitely more on Team Hera than Team Cham, but I have enough sympathy for why he's upset mm-hmm. that I feel like he's not done with his journey of reconciliation, but I do feel like he's made some very big steps, given that he had, like... I do think that there's something valid. I think symbolic victories are very important for motivating people, you know? And I think it's set up as though it's a silly thing, but I think his goal of, like, I want my people to see the destruction of the ship that's been in orbit for mm-hmm. however long, you know, that's a legit goal. And so I really appreciate that they get to, it's not that he's just like, fine, I'll give up on that to help you in your battle. He does get to, like, destroy a ship.
The TIE bomber. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, I feel like we could have come to this compromise using words instead of betrayal, right? Because, like, Hera's explaining, hey, listen, we need this ship for mm-hmm. the rebellion. Like, I get that you want to make a big symbolic gesture, but, like, let's not blow up this thing that is very valuable and that we could use and really need to use right now. And they could have just, like, had a little chat and been like, okay, what if we blew up something else instead? It's like, yeah, cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. I hear that. Definitely hear that.
But, I mean, yeah, that's not really fun to watch on TV, so.
I mean, also true. Also. Yeah, but I mean, I guess I also do feel like, I don't know. I'm maybe too much of a Cham stan here. But, like, you know, because I think he's a terrible father. But I think, I don't know, you know, resistance tactics and things like that. Not necessarily, like, military. But just the extent to which, like, how much you're fighting your own particular fight versus fighting the larger fights. And how much, you know, I think these are just topics that are very much on my mind lately. And so Cham is just one that I'm sympathetic to, even though not a good father.
Oh, totally. And I have, like, a huge grudge against bad dads. So, like, I acknowledge
I'm with you there.
My bias. Definitely,
definitely with you there. All right. So I think that's, again, a pretty good place to wrap up the episode. Any other last thing about this?
No, I think we covered all my issues.
Okay. So thank you all so much for listening. If you're going to check out now because you don't want to be here in the spoiler section, totally great. Remember that if you want to find my other podcasts, if you go to theethicalpanda.com, you'll find everything about that. Also, you'll find our contact information. We love getting emails. We're getting some great comments, tweets, Facebook messages. I'm going to read some out probably for our next episode. Love keeping them in. Let me have a conversation with you all. So on behalf of myself and Sarah, thank you all so much. Have a good day. And now we'll enter into the spoiler section in 3, 2, 1. Space whales are going to come back.
Space whales. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Knowing that the space whales come back to rescue Ezra and kind of like take him and Thrawn into some extra dimensional thing.
Yeah.
Which clearly, like, we're setting up that I think a lot of the Ahsoka show is going to be about that in some way.
I hope so, yeah.
It was just great to see them show up again here.
Totally, yeah. Well, and, like, because this is only my second time watching through it. So when I watched The Call the first time, I was like, space whales, neat. Obi-Wan Kenobi vibes. Mm-hmm. And that was about it. And then, like, watching it again, knowing that he gets, like, saved slash abducted by these space whales. I'm like, oh, right. Ezra, they're so meaningful to you. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, especially because, and I know earlier I was saying that it strains my ability to believe, and that's true. But I think the flip side of it is that maybe that's kind of supposed to be the point, because it's supposed to be like, you know, people think that all their technology, all their force use, like, we just know everything. We figured out everything. And so to have this thing exist that doesn't make any sense to our own rules of why it should exist, it's hard to swallow because it makes no sense, but it's maybe also a nice reminder of, like, yeah, they're just, who knows what you're going to find out.
Yeah.
There.
It's like, space is really, 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 really big. Like, yeah. Like, mind-blowingly, incomprehensibly big. There's a whole lot of nothing in it, but there's probably a whole lot of everything else as well, right? And we just don't know. And, yeah, even this, I mean, like, when we were talking about Lyra San, right? Even the idea that it's on the outer rim through, like, a weird black hole field. Like, is a black hole field even a thing that you could navigate? What? But, yeah. It's, I like the idea of the space whales. I don't think I'm as, I think I can suspend enough disbelief to just be like, yeah, cool, space whales, why not?
That's all.
But, yeah, I mean, I get why you're like, what do they eat? Are there space krill? Yeah.
I mean, but I've had that back to this huge creature that lives on an asteroid where there's no life growing whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea what it eats, you know?
Yeah.
But
it eats ships.
There we go.
And weren't there, like, Minox inside of it or something? Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's more just kind of like the parasites that live in your gut, you know? Like, you're not eating those. They're just helping you digest.
Yeah, okay.
All right, any other last things you want to say as part of the spoiler section? I think that was the only big thing I wanted to chip in with.
Yeah, related to this stuff, yeah. I guess I had to, like, I don't know. I've been reading fan fiction. So I had to, like, refresh my what's actually real and what is just, yeah, some creators' ideas of how this ends, but yeah.
Is it fan fiction? Like, obviously it's, like, the slash one. Hondo and Naka and who?
Not Hondo. Okay, no, because none of them happen to be Hondo and Naka and Sarah Hayashi, tragically.
That's fair. I also, like, I mean, I have a great respect for fan fiction writers. Many of them are very, very good. I wouldn't trust anyone but not Nave Dame Filoni to write Hondo and Naka.
That's fair. Yeah, there's, like, there's, like, stuff that deals with, like, Hera and Kanan and, like, Jacen. I'm like, who the heck is Jacen? Because I forgot that they had a kid. It's, like, a whole thing. And then I was like, oh, right, Ezra and Thrawn go down on space whales. Wild.
they get captured by space whales. That particular phrase.
Yeah, there we go. It's talking about that was a different fan fiction that I read.
Definitely.
Yes, yes. There's like the space whales save them. They're like falling, and the whales like jump out, save them, and then hyperspace away. Right? Is that what happens?
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. And like, yeah. But yeah, just going back and watching it and seeing, because I think a part of that is that to some extent Ezra summons them. And so being reminded that he has this like initial connection with him that's really strong.
Yeah.
It's really powerful for me.
And like in, oh gosh, I don't even know. It's not the Mining Guild one. Maybe in like another episode coming up shortly, he like summons, I think I'm talking, doesn't, they're like one of the like the bat things. No, it's just the whale again. I'm confused. Yeah. Sorry. The fact that he's the only one who can hear them. Like he hears their whale song, doesn't really know how to describe it.
Yeah.
Has this like mind link with them. Yeah. Ezra and the space whales.
And it's nice, I think, also because it's, you know, kind of referenced it. There's an episode we will be watching next week where there's even more of the kind of like, wait, hold on a second. No, because the first one had,
17, which we're going to be watching, is like the Callous Zeb. Also, we need a giant spoiler section for.
Right. Okay. The romance begins. Let me take the whole thing again. Yeah. So I think that was a big thing in the spoiler section I want to talk about. Also, just getting to see Ezra be like coming into his own, that he can do things that Kanan can't. You know, it's just a really nice dynamic. Really appreciate it. All right, well, to our listeners, again, thank you so much. Sarah, if people are in the mood for some ceramics, for gifts coming up, or maybe your early Mother's Day shopping, or any of that stuff, what do you got on Star?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can forego Etsy. So you can check me out on my Instagram, Sarah Hayashi Art is my handle, and I'll be doing little sales there. I might end up putting things on Etsy, which is Etsy.shop/Hayashi Ceramics. So keep an eye on there, but I'll post on Instagram about it if I do. So Instagram's cool. The best way to follow me.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out. Like I said, I gave some as Christmas gifts. They were very well received. Check out all the other stuff that I'm doing on theethicalpanda.com. And most importantly, have a nice day.